Hello, everyone. Welcome to another Inside the Birds TV with Jeff Mosher and Adam Kaplan, presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Now, this promises to be a special edition of ITB TV. We have a new guest making his first appearance on the show, and he doesn't need much introduction from me. We're very excited, very appreciative to have with us the voice of the Philadelphia Eagles, the soundtrack to our football falls and winters, the one and only Mr. Merrill Reese. Merrill, what's going on, man? It's so great to catch up with you.
Thank you, Jeff. It's great to hear from you and great to see you, Adam. Everything's wonderful. We're getting back to normal. Life is returning to what it was. Not 100% yet, but boy, we're getting close. And last week I was at the OTAs and we didn't even have to wear a mask. So that's good. That's good. So I'm excited. We're only a couple of months away from the first preseason game. So the hunger for football is starting to come back.
No doubt about it, Merrill. It's there, and people are going to love to hear your take in this show, just being around the NovaCare as you have on a lot of the newness. I want to ask you about that first.
Well, wait a minute. When you say being around the NovaCare, I'm around the NovaCare in that I did pass it walking onto the field. But we have not been in the NovaCare for over a year now.
Right. But you were on the fields, though, correct?
I was on the field, yes.
That's all that anybody cares about. You know, if you were stopping by Howie's office, that's no big deal.
Actually, last week, the media workout was over at the link.
That's right. So you were there for that?
I was there.
All right, awesome. So we'll get some really good insight from you. First, we want to tell our audience to make sure they're downloading the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app. Now, use the promo code ITB to turn $1 into $100 in free credits. That's promo code ITB to turn $1 into $100 in free credits using the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app. So, Merrill, I want to start with this because I think it's really pressing. You know, last year was certainly your first year of the 44 and now to be 45, where you weren't able to go on the road and do road games, right? You broadcasted road games from the link, if I'm correct.
Mm-hmm.
So what was that experience like? And what do you know about this year coming up, what you and Mike Quick and everybody at Howard will be able to do this year?
Well, I'll take the last part first, because I can answer that simply by saying I don't know and they don't know. I saw this week where Roger Goodell issued a statement saying that locker rooms throughout the league would not be open to the media. I believe it will be a Roger Goodell NFL decision where he can say only, as he did last year, only essential football personnel will be allowed on the team charter. So that's all I know. That they did that last year, what they'll do this year remains to be seen. I don't know. I would like to be on the team charter, but who knows?
Right. How tough was that then last year to do the games? And you know, you open the windows. I mean, tell us what goes into doing a broadcast.
Well, first of all, the home games, of course, were the home games. And we had even a better, setup. Because we were down a level in the presidential suite, nice, which is the Borgata suite. So it was one level down, one level closer to the field. Mike and I were separated by plexiglass, and Bill Burndell was separated by plexiglass, which is really great. the farther we get from Billy, the better. And I worked with six different screens for the away games. So if you guys have seen our booth at the link, we are now located right next to network television. We're on the 50-yard line. We have a great view, but the five of us sit across from next to each other, four of us, Mike, me, and then comes my spotter, Bill Wendell, and Terry Small, our statistician. So the four of us sit in a space that really comfortably seats three. So we have to really breathe in to really fit. And then Joe McPeak, our producer, stands behind us, and Lane Massey, our engineer, stands behind him. So we were very, very comfortable. As far as the away games were concerned, we had one screen which showed exactly what the people at home saw. We had another screen, big 60-inch screen, which showed the same picture, but in real time. There was no delay, no three-second delay. We saw it as it occurred, which, by the way, is what network television, those guys, when they do network television, they also have a real-time monitor, big real-time monitor right in front of them. So when we have to crunch down and put up the binoculars and hope we get it right on a pass deep in the corner, they can look at that big screen. We also had an all 22 screen, which showed, and Adam, you know what that is. That's the panoramic view of the entire field with everybody on it. And we also had a screen. So Terry Small, our statistician, usually has a grid. And on that grid, there's 1 through 100. And if the punt was 43 yards, he'll point to the 43. And if it's returned 12 yards, he'll point to the 12. Or if the pass play was good for 16, he points to all the numbers. In this case, he somehow transmitted it on another screen to me, and he would transmit statistics, running statistics as the game went on a screen. I didn't have to look forward. He didn't have to pass me little pieces of paper. Joe McPeak, my producer, is used to handing me what we call drop-ins, the commercials you hear between every play or so. And these all came up on a screen. Plus, he had voice communication to me, which he doesn't during a game. Usually he goes, "Stand by," and Mike Rick says, "Shh," and holds his ears. Joe just had to say, "Stand by," and we heard it in our headset. So that was all. We were working with all these screens. After the first time or so, we had it down pat. And I'll tell you what, I would rather work with 14 screens than sit in the press box at Washington. In the corner of the end zone, there's an overhang. We can't see the scoreboard. When they're past the 50, you can't tell whether they gained 6 yards or 16. You know, so there are certain advantages.
You know, Merrill, listen to you as I have, being a native Philadelphian. There have always been some great calls. But one of my favorite calls that you had was one, typically, when you do play-by-play, you have no idea what's going to happen the next play. When you called the famous Miracle in Meadowlands play, and you said, "I can't believe what I just saw," bring us into that play, because as we would later learn, it was memorable. It was historic in the National Football League history. It's one of the best calls ever. But we didn't know it at the time, really, what it meant. Did you quite understand as you called it, "Wait a minute, did that just happen? Was that one of those type calls?"
No, you're talking about Miracle One.
Yes, the one, the old Meadowlands, yes.
November 19th, 1978.
Yep.
Okay, that's what you're talking about, yep, Miracle correct. One.
I remember I was 2 years old, Merrill.
Jeff, I was a child prodigy. I was 4 broadcasting the game. Yeah.
Really? Amazing. Sure
you were.
Amazing. But here's what happened. I was doing the game with the late Jim Barniak. And at that point, the game was all but over. And my line was right before that, next week, the Eagles will play the Cardinals in St. Louis. And that's about where I was. When all of a sudden, the ball was fumbled. The snap came to Pizarcik. He turned to hand it off to Larry Zonka. It hit his hip. The ball went loose. It was scooped up by Herman Edwards. And off he went. As he ran, I sensed that something historic was taking place. And I started saying, "I don't believe it. I do not believe it. I cannot believe what occurred here, ladies and gentlemen." And by that time, Billy Werndau, our spotter, went like this and pointed to Charlie Johnson. And I said, and Charlie Johnson hit him. And Herman Edwards scooped up the fumble and ran the ball into the end zone. And it was hysteria. But I knew right then and there that was something I had never seen and probably would never see again. And I did say at that point, I used the word Miracle of the Meadowlands. This is a miracle. And everybody remembers where they were when that occurred. But I knew then and there that I could broadcast for 50 more years and I wouldn't see anything like that. But you know what? The one on December 19th, 2010, miracle number two, with the Sean Jackson. Now, don't forget, the Herman Edwards one was not a walk-off. You realize that they still had to kick off to the Giants. And there was a play or two run before that thing was over. But on December 10th, 2019, it's amazing. It's amazing. I mean, December 19th, 2010. Funny thing is, that miracle was November 19th, the first one, November 19th, 1978. The second one was with Brian Westbrook. It was a Brian Westbrook punt return.
Right.
That was miraculous. That was October 19th at the Meadowlands. And the last one was December 19th. They were all on the 19th.
Wow, that is crazy.
They were all at the Meadowlands.
Yeah, unbelievable. And they were all, you thought the first one, you said you'd never see anything like it, and then there's a number two and a number three.
Well, number two.
I know number one will always be different.
But the other one, the December 19th, 2010, that was miraculous because of the game itself. The game was so bad in the first half. I remember saying that Eli Manning had time to drop back, read War and Peace, and then still find the receiver. That's how much time the Eagles were giving him. And then in the third quarter, at the beginning of the third quarter, I did say that this thing, as the Giants scored again, was as good as over. When lo and behold, Michael Vick went over the middle and hit Brent Celek with a relatively short pass, which he turned into a 68-yard touchdown.
Yeah, I remember that like it was yesterday, Merrill. That was an unbelievable play. I wonder how many people, by the way, are going to watch this video and say, I don't know about that, Merrill. He might be losing it now. He said the Eagles were going to play the Cardinals in St. Louis the next week. And, you know, the Cardinals in St. Louis, he's mixing up baseball and football. But lo and behold, we've had the Cardinals out of St. Louis for quite a while. And they were the Rams. And of course, the Cardinals were in
the end gear of Jim Hart. Sure.
Yeah. Sure. So, Merrill, you were saying, obviously, after Celek got the touchdown there, turned the short pass into a touchdown.
Yeah, right after that. They went with an onside kick that nobody expected, and it was recovered. It was recovered by Riley Cooper, and again, on they went. I mean, it was amazing. It was really amazing that they recovered that and started marching again. And this time, I believe it was Jeremy Maclin in the left side of the end zone who caught the touchdown pass. Then they came down again, and Michael Vick scored on a quarterback draw, and which no one saw coming. And then they came down again, and there was another touchdown pass to Jeremy Maclin. Maclin had an amazing game. We all talk about. Now, Vick, to me, I still say this. Michael Vick's second half was 30 minutes of the best quarterback performance I've ever seen in my life. That's how good it was.
Yeah, it's hard to argue that.
He totally grabbed this team by the chin straps and took them in for a win. He passed magnificently. He led that team. He ran for numerous yards. He scored on a draw. He was absolutely amazing.
Merrill, most people don't get to call play-by-play, you know, for the NFL or any sport. So take us inside what the preparation is like, because it's very unique. Football is a different sport than baseball, hockey, and basketball. They're all different. I know you've called college basketball in your career, but what is it like to prepare for an Eagles game?
It's a way of life. It's not just, you know, put down a few notes and go, you know, do a game. I mean, you've heard football players say that they're paid for what they do in practice on Tuesday through Saturday, and that they would actually play the games for free. And the truth of the matter is, we really earn our living on preparing during the week. I mean, I get home on a Sunday night from a game and I'm already setting up my cards for the next week. My wife, who taught school for 19 years, Cindy, walks around all week with flashcards and she's calling out numbers and I'm calling them back, you know. This goes on all the time, constantly. And with the opponent.
Yeah.
I look at end zone offense all week. I'm down at NovaCare every day. I used to be once upon a time in the locker room. You know, nobody understands how important that is. You guys do that. We can actually go up to players in the locker room. And sometimes it's, you notice a player that the guys are around the quarterback or they're around the receiver who made the thing. And I could go over and talk to, you know, to Jordan Mailata all by myself. And I actually can talk to them and get to know them and get some real insight. I will tell you something else. Doug Peterson gave me a private 45 minutes every week where I could actually sit down with him alone and ask any question I had. It was nothing barred. And I could say to him, Doug, would you go over any gadget plays you have? Because we're only allowed to practice for the warm-ups and the stretching and what they call the individual stuff. We're not allowed in when they do the install. And Doug would go over and say, well, we have something where we're going to do with a quick pitch at the Greg Ward. And he's going to reverse it to Miles Sanders, who's going to throw it downfield to Carson Wentz. I mean, he would actually go over that with me, and I would commit it to memory so that I would know what to look for. Although I was not there at practice or any other time where anybody ever went over the Philly special with that I was seeing for the first time, and thank goodness I picked it up. But Doug would, and I could ask Doug about a player, and Doug would confide in me, he's not playing well, or I didn't like what he did at practice. Doug would be absolutely, totally honest with me. You know, Doug knows that I always kidded him that I thought one of his worst calls was the Philly special. tell you about that call. I learned a lot of things over the years, and I have a long frame of reference. And you might remember the playoff game. We now call it the 4th-and-26 game against the Green Bay Packers, where Freddie Mitchell picked up the first down to keep it going, which I still, to this day, don't believe was a first down. I looked right down that stripe, and he was short, and they gave him a fortuitous spot. But I still don't believe that was a first down. However, right before halftime, the Packers had a 4th-and-goal at the Eagles 1. And Mike Sherman was the Packers coach, and he went for it, and the Eagles stacked them up right then and there. And I knew at that moment that the Eagles were going to win that game. There was no doubt in my mind because the entire momentum of that game changed. So now we are years later, and it's the Super Bowl, and it's 4th-and-1, and they have this sideline conference. And I'm saying, listen, Mike McCormick told me years ago, when you're down there, you can't come away without any points. And I'm thinking, number one, you're playing the New England Patriots. You've got 3 automatic points. If they stack you up, it's over, because not only are they stopping you and killing momentum, but they're getting the kickoff to begin the second half. You've got to kick it off to them. Take your 3 points. And of course, the Philly special, and I said that on the air, and the Philly special unfurls and they score. And Mike Quick says on the air, well, Merrill, that's why you're up here and don't stand there. And I told Doug the entire sequence, and he laughed. And so, of course, that's, now you will remember in that third quarter, the Eagles kicked off and the Packers went right downfield, Brady to Gronkowski to
Patriots.
They went right downfield like it was nothing to Hogan. And they scored right away. If the Eagles hadn't scored that touchdown, if they had been stopped, I really think they would have lost that game.
Plus the Ertz catch, which was incredible, that we jumped up. It was one of those situations where they had to get the momentum, as you were talking about, was to the Patriots. And he, you would remember the play. It was over the middle, and it wasn't a deep pass. It was relatively short, but it was a huge play in the game.
Great catch.
Yeah.
You're talking about the fourth down one, not even the
fourth down one that extended the game.
Extended
the drive.
Right. Merrill, that game, which was the most points scored in NFL playoff game, do you care about how many points are scored? You just want a great game, or do you prefer high scoring or low scoring? Does it matter to you?
If you're talking about the Super Bowl,
just in general,
I just want to win. No, okay, I don't care.
Got it.
I don't care. I really don't care. I've seen some great defensive struggles where a team wins 13-10. I can appreciate defense. I really can. It doesn't have to be a circus to me. The Super Bowl turned out to be a circus, but it was also poor defense. A lot of breakdowns by both teams.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely. I saw Jim Schwartz the next morning, on Monday morning before we flew back, and I was down there, and he was alone in the lobby, and I was alone, and we talked, and he was still disturbed by the way the defense played. And however, I made a statement. Right before the biggest play of the game, I said, the Eagles have to do something here to come up with a turnover, to do something like that. And on the very next play, that was when Brandon Graham separated Brady from the ball, and it was recovered by Barnett.
There you go. You evened it out. You questioned the Philly special, but you forecasted the Brandon Graham play.
It's a lot of fun when there's a lot of scoring, but boy, some of those defensive plays, those big stops, those
he stopped
big
them hits, again. Stopped them again.
Well, that was one. They stopped them again. Yeah, it was Groundhog Day. They stopped them again.
I remember it, man. That was against the Cardinals, Merrill.
Dallas.
That
was
Barry
Dallas. No, but there wasn't there a Cardinal game though with Joe Bugle as the coach where.
Yes.
Also, they yes. kept running. Yeah,
they, yeah, they kept on. They kept stopping Stump Mitchell.
Yep, see?
That's right.
What was Stump Mitchell's real first name?
Oh, gosh. He's a Browns running back coach. I don't remember.
It wasn't Dallas, was it?
Or no, Lavonia Albert Mitchell.
Oh, I was way off. Lavonia? Wow.
Lavonia Albert. Nobody names their kids Stump.
All right, Merrill, you talked about the coaching staff, so I want to get into the new staff with you.
But just to go back to Adam for a second.
Sure.
I don't know what I might have said they stopped it, but the one that everyone talks about, the stop them again, came in that game with Emmitt Smith, and where they ran, got caught at the 2-minute warning, and then they ran it again, and I went, they stopped them again. It was Emmitt Smith they stopped twice.
Yep.
And I said, it's Groundhog Day, they stopped them again.
All right, Merrill, I want to ask you about this new coaching staff first. I want to tell our friends to don't be a loser. Don't pay full retail price for the things you want and need. Get on Deal Dash. That's DealDash.com or download the Deal Dash app. Use the promo code ITB for a special offer for bonus free bids when you sign up. So, Merrill, I very much wonder this about someone like yourself who gets to know the coaches and you have, like you mentioned with Doug, some personal time. This is going to be your 45th year with the team broadcasting. So you've been through a lot of different regimes. And let's kind of set aside the ugliness of last year and what happened with Doug and Carson. This is a fresh new slate, I guess, for this franchise. For someone who's been doing this as long as you have, do you ever get is it like a renewed sense of energy? Do you intrigue whenever there's a new regime like this?
You know, Jeff, I never lose energy.
That's true.
You tell me the camp is opening in 4 weeks or whatever. I'm ready and excited. I love it. And I'm as nervous on game day now as I was 45 years ago. I wake up and it's a game and I'm nervous. I mean, Cindy gives me a stack of pancakes before I leave the house for a home game. Because when you guys are going through that buffet, I can't even look at food once I get to the stadium. That's how nervous I am. And then when they cue me and I go on the air, it all goes away and I feel like I'm in a zone for the next 3.5 or 4 hours. So that doesn't change. But am I excited? Yeah, I'm always excited. But I am intrigued by what we're about to see. And I did spend an hour with Nick Sirianni on a private one-on-one Zoom call. And I had a whole list of things I was going to ask him. I had to want to talk to him about his offensive style, what he thinks of Jalen Hurts, all these things. And he opened it up and said, "Merle, I'm really looking forward to speaking to you." I said, "Great, Nick." And for the next hour, we just talked about, "Well, did you know him?" "Yeah, I knew him. Let me tell you a story about," and we just talked in a most animated way for an hour. And I couldn't believe the hour passed. It was just fun to be on with him. He's a great guy. I have a feeling he's going to be a terrific communicator. It reminded me of a sense of energy. Now, look, we've got to go a long way because this guy was the greatest coach I've ever been around. But it reminded me of a 38-year-old coach coming in from UCLA many years ago, Dick Vermeil, with that energy, that energy that you could just feel. Now, Nick has that energy. And the players really seem to respond to him. So I'm anxious. Now, he has a young staff, but with youth comes innovation. So I don't know what Jonathan Gannon is going to put out there in terms of his style. I mean, we've had hints that it's going to probably be more of a 4-3 than a 3-4, but we don't really know. And we'll wait and see. But I'm excited about this group. And people say, "But they're all young coaches." No, they're not. In my opinion, the most important job is the head coach. The second most important job is not the defensive coordinator. It's the offensive line coach. I think to win today, you must have a good offensive line. And the Eagles have the best offensive line coach in the NFL. In Jeff Stoutland. So I'm excited. I really am.
Merle, one thing you mentioned, Dick Vermeil, and I remember as a kid, you're 10 or 11 years old, you talked about him coming from UCLA. I watched a lot of college football. I was thinking, why would Dick Vermeil come here? I know I would later learn, I didn't know it as a kid, but he actually worked for the Rams and George Allen in the 60s. But looking at Dick Vermeil, did you have a sense of how great of a coach he was? I don't think the younger people watching us have any idea of how brilliant he was and how it was so – that team, and you mentioned Mike McCormick. Growing was a little kid here. The Eagles were so bad in the early to mid-70s before Vermeil got here. What did Vermeil do to turn the fortunes of the franchise around?
It was the energy. It was the energy. It was the authoritativeness. It was the work ethic. It was the passion for the game. It was the fact that he – involved every Philadelphia fan. He used to, you know, "We won that game and it starts with every secretary and it starts with everybody in this organization all the way up to Mr. Toast." I mean, Dick took control. He was tough, but he was animated. He was passionate. He gripped everybody. Everybody in Philadelphia was so excited because he came through to them. I mean, my wife thought they just hired Robert Redford. You know, that's what he looked like, a young Robert Redford. So Nick doesn't exactly look like a Robert Redford. You know, he's more of a today looking guy with the 5 o'clock shadow. But Nick's got that, he's got that passion. He's got that enthusiasm. He really loves it. And I know we have to see. There's a big difference between a coach coming in who hasn't coached one game and one who belongs in the Hall of Fame, which I believe Dick does, but and who still has his picture on billboards for Blue Cross. I mean, Dick is the greatest coach I've ever been around. Well, you know, Andy has more wins, but Dick is the greatest coach I've ever been around.
Right, Merrill, well, last question for you, and we appreciate the time. It's been great to catch up with you.
It feels like we've been on for 5 minutes.
Oh, well, we can do it for a half hour more. No, I'm just playing with you. But Jalen Hurts, have you had any chance to interact with him over the past few months at all, or get to know him at all and get any impression of him?
You know what, Jeff? I have never been in the same room with Jalen Hurts.
Amazing.
And the reason is because of COVID.
Right.
They were completely restricted. We didn't travel. I mean, I guess if you want to call the same room the confines of Lincoln Financial Field, yes, I was there,
right,
but I wasn't allowed on the field to go up and talk to him. I've never met him. I've never spoken with him. But I do know this, that the players like him a lot. And I had somebody tell me that, and deep in the organization, that there were tests given for a quarterback's ability to look at a play and at a defense and process it from eyes to brain to arm, and that he was in the top 1%.
Right.
And I love his athleticism. And anybody who says his arm strength is questionable has never really seen him throw the football. He's got a powerful arm. He's got a very good arm. And he's fast. So I like him. I really do. And you know, I don't see how anybody could judge him and say, well, I mean, look, he first of all, I've heard people say he was 1-3 as a starter. That's not true. I would say that he was 1-2, because if you want to count that last game where they pulled him, he very well might have won that. I think if he's in, they win that game against Washington. Okay. You can't put that in the loss column where they took him out for the fourth quarter and threw in Sudfeld. You just can't do that. Number two, they say his completion percentage was down. It was down in the low 50s because Doug Peterson told him, I don't want you to take sacks. If you can't find a receiver, throw it out of bounds. Something that Carson Wentz didn't do. And Carson got sacked over 50 times.
Right.
So a lot of those, that completion percentage wasn't a product of inaccurate passing. A lot of it was just throwing the ball out to avoid the sack.
Right. That test also of Jalen Hurts' mindset is something that Jason Avant, who you know well, has talked about on our platform in his show Q&A about how he was among the top 1% in processing. And we found that really fascinating. Okay. Yeah.
That's where I got it from, Jason.
Really?
Yeah.
There you go.
That's funny.
same source.
There you go. Hey, Jason's running around dishing companies.
He's an insider now.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
Jason Avant should be on the coaching staff because he has that kind of football mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was last year, as you know. He's the assistant wide receivers coach. And what he told Adam and I on a joint show was that he really loved it, but realized after spending, 24 hours a day just doing nothing but coaching, that maybe coaching wasn't for him. So we're gonna have him stick around with us for a little bit.
He's one of my favorite people.
Great guy, definitely. And Merrill, you're one of our favorite people. We really appreciate you coming on. Great insight. Good to walk down memory lane with you on some of the great moments in Eagles history as well. So hopefully some
great memories are built on what occurs during this 2021 season. It'll be fun to have fans in the stands once again. Oh, I'll just quickly tell you something. You asked about working without fans and getting the emotion. In our headset, they played sound that was recorded by NFL Films from every stadium that we were at. And it was recorded from previous years when they were at full capacity. So when I was doing a game off the screen, I still heard the loud roaring crowds that kept me in the game and kept the enthusiasm and sense of drama up.
Right. Wow, that was a cool part of it. That's excellent stuff. All right, we want to thank our friends at Sky Motor Cars. Make sure if you're looking to trade in a car and get the most money, you go to Sky Motor Cars or skymotorcars.com. Thanks to our friends at Deal Dash, at DraftKings. For Merrill Reese, the incomparable Merrill Reese, Adam Kaplan, I'm Jeff Mosher. You've all been watching the latest ITB TV. We'll catch you on the next one.